Welcome to News in Focus with your host, Chris Long, President of the Ohio Christian Alliance. Stay tuned for an analysis and conversation about the issues that matter most to you and your family. Here now with this week's edition of News in Focus is Chris Long.
And happy Thanksgiving to you and your family, and we're glad that you've joined us for this special edition of News in Focus. We are going to talk about Thanksgiving. In fact, we're going to talk about the first Thanksgiving. We're going to return to Plymouth on this program, but let me begin with a verse of Scripture from 1 Thessalonians chapter 5, verses 16, 17, and 18. Rejoice evermore, pray without ceasing, in everything give thanks, for this is the will of God in Christ Jesus concerning you. Well, with me on the phone is Pastor Paul Jaley, and he is the executive director of what is Plymouth Rock Foundation. And he pastors a church in Plymouth, Massachusetts. And in fact, he's helped with reenactments. His church has helped with reenactments of the Pilgrims and the Puritans who made that settlement nearly 400 years ago. In fact, we're approaching the 400th anniversary of the Pilgrim landing. That will be in 2020. Pastor, welcome to the program.
Well, welcome. I'm glad to be with you. And yes, it's quite a time as we're preparing for the 400th anniversary.
Well, it is very exciting. You know, all these years, and of course, I'm a history buff myself, and our mutual friend Bill Fetter, we've had him numerous times here in the state of Ohio to speak to conferences and some of our freedom banquets that we hold annually. And I'd never had the opportunity to go to Boston and or Plymouth Rock. And I'd always wanted to go. And this last summer, there was an opportunity. We're taking our son back to Villanova for school. And my wife had a few days off. And we dropped him in Philadelphia. I said, you know what? Why don't we just head up there to Plymouth? And why don't we also walk Freedom Trail? So we did. And we just had a delightful time. And Bill introduced us to Leo Martin and his wife, Nancy, the Jenny Museum. And he took us on a tour. I think you were somewhere else that day. You and I didn't get a chance to meet personally. The next day, we were on a quick turnaround, so we did go up to Boston, and Richard took us on a tour through Freedom Trail. So we just had a great time, and we're looking forward to going back to Plymouth this next summer. In fact, we're trying to bring a group with us to spend a few days with you, and then also Bill Fetter will help us as well. So we're looking forward to that. But Pastor,
great.
Tell us about how you returned to Plymouth. What brought you back to Plymouth Rock?
Well, I had been a mathematics major in college and then got involved with studying and researching primary source documents in history in the late 1970s. An individual right here in Plymouth, John Talcott, opened his library to me and inspired me to get started in really researching the documents. And instead of just reading what historians had said about it, I read the original documents of William Bradford and Mort's Relation, the Diary of the Pilgrims, and began to recognize here I was in a church right in South Plymouth. And that got me inspired to join some of the historic societies here and then get involved in researching about the Pilgrim story. And I have to admit that it was a journey down memory lane because, for me, I had never really had an interest in history 40-some years ago. But today, I'm very involved in the community, and of course, I have an alter ego, so to speak. I get dressed up in costume, and I become different characters on the Freedom Trail, but most often, I'm dressed as a pilgrim right here in Plymouth and do tours. Of course, that's not what I do full-time, but that's what I do on the side. And in a sense, I'm a historian by hobby.
Well, your home church, there is New Testament Church of Cedarville there in Plymouth. And I'm looking at your website. In fact, we look forward to joining you for service when we come and visit you again up there in Plymouth. We're going to be making a number of trips, I think, between now and the 400th anniversary. And, of course, that's going to be a big deal, and I think nationally it's going to be a big deal. And, obviously, God has kind of led you there, I believe, to, and that's what our good friend Bill Fetter believes, is kind of to pave the way so that we can retain our heritage and our history as a nation, and, of course, the Plymouth Landing. And, you know, one of the things that inspired me some years ago was Peter Marshall. Of course, he was the son of the famed Senate chaplain, Reverend Marshall. Peter Marshall and David Manuel wrote a book called The Light and the Glory. I'm sure you're familiar with it. And it really helped to introduce the country back to what brought these people of faith to New England. They thought they were Virginia. And, of course, Virginia was anything somewhere between Georgia and all the way up to Maine. But that was considered Virginia. And, of course, the Virginia landings. But they were going to go north, I think, originally. They were thinking of putting into port somewhere around New York. But the Lord in Providence had something else in mind. Tell us a little bit about that when the Pilgrims landed in 1620.
Right. And, you know, the original charter of King James in 1606, which had been influenced by some Christians in Parliament and other areas, had opened up exploration by the English on the eastern seaboard. And the interesting part about it, of course, there was an attempted settlement in Maine long before the Pilgrims, but that was abandoned about 9 months later. And then that same charter kept inspiring people, and in a sense, New England was providentially prepared for the Pilgrims, which really, when they came, this was not an exploration company. This was a church. This was a church plant in New England from the Pilgrims themselves. And the reason is these Pilgrims were children of the Reformation. They believed that they would be converted by the power of the Holy Spirit. They believed in Jesus Christ as the only way to salvation. They believed in the Scriptures as the final authority. And these people began to study. There was a revival going on in England. We call it the Reformation, but this was a powerful time where the Bible, the Geneva edition, had come to the hearth and home of the English, and people began to study the Bible for themselves. We take it for granted. We have so many around our homes, but in this case, this was very, very precious to them. And they began to form a church, and this church was no longer a part of the established church that you were automatically a member of the moment you were born. And so they voluntarily began to join together, form a covenant. As they said, whatsoever it should cost them, they would be accountable to one another and to God. And this, of course, caused all kinds of problems in England because they were illegal. They were worshiping outside the established church. And this, of course, by 1604, King James had said, I will harry out of the land anybody that refuses to worship at the established church. So these pilgrims, called separatists, which is a derogatory name because they were separating from the Church of England, they paid a dear price for what we all take for granted. And this is long before they ever came to America. In fact, they, because of it, ended up escaping to Holland and spending 12 years there before coming here to the New World. And so these individuals were willing to die for their faith. In fact, some of the original members of not just the Pilgrim Church, but the Reformation were hung and were martyred for their faith. So here are individuals that know the cost, and yet full families, children, husbands and wives, all decided that they were going to begin to worship even though it was underground and illegal. And there was no religious liberty to as such in England, though there was more in Holland. So this is how the Pilgrim story began, long before they actually got to America.
Well, that's right. They believed in common preaching. They believed in prayer. They believed in reading the Scriptures in a very common gathering of simple faith. And it was that faith that forged them to go forward to have religious freedom. As you said, that they were persecuted in England. Because they weren't part of the established church, similar to what Chinese Christians are facing today. I just heard a report of where if you're not part of a government church, you can be persecuted. You know, they'll raid your home, they'll arrest you, put you in prison. That's what these Christians were facing at that time in England. So they were looking to come
that's
to the
right.
New World to form and to found a place where their children and their families could be raised in freedom and religious freedom. So it's very much part of the Pilgrim story and, of course, the Plymouth story. You know, one of the things that inspired me when I was taking the tour with Leo Martin, a good friend of yours, of the Jenny Museum, and he pointed out to the monument to the women who came across. So unique of the time period, because when there were those who were making settlements and those who were explorers, they didn't take women and children with them. But the women
That's
came to Plymouth because that was the great heritage, and that was the great treasure that they brought on board, was they were going to make families, and they were going to raise those families in God. And so that was really inspirational to me, because those women were so courageous.
That's right. And, you know, they recognized that here was this church that had grown to be a bit over 300 people in Leiden, Holland. They had had a bit more religious freedom. But it was the year 1617, exactly 400 years ago, that the Pilgrim Church began to recognize they were not going to be able to stay in Holland. And there were several reasons for this. Number one, they recognized the truce with Spain was going to end by 1620. So they realized they better get out, because they could be caught in the midst of a war. Second, they realized that they were getting older. Their mission to really extend the kingdom of Christ, as they put it, in the remote parts of the world, though they would be even as stepping stones unto others for the performing of so great a work, that mission would not be fulfilled if they remained in Holland. Their children were beginning to pick up Dutch ways and leave off their English Christian heritage. And all of these factors counted into them saying, look, we believe it's God's will for us to leave and leave. And then they began to say, well, where are we going to go? You know, and it took 3 years to get the right documents in place and everything else, and to determine exactly where they were going to go. And then they decided they'd go to the northern parts of Virginia. And as you mentioned, Virginia was just a large swath of land at the time. And so they wanted to go as far north as they could. They did not want to be close to where Jamestown was, but they wanted to have their own self-government. And yet here they were. They had been harried out of the land by King James, and now they're going to need the assent of King James to get the license and to get the patent in order to be able to go and have a legitimate colony. And yet what this really was a church plant. So out of that 350 people, they had to take a vote. And 75 to 80 of those original pilgrims or original members of that church decided to come to the New World. And these were families. And I've heard many times, Wampanoag historians even note, that when they arrived as families, they realized this was different. They were not arriving to conquer. They were not interested in doing some of the what the other explorers had done, which were wrong. They came here to build a peaceful settlement and to plant a church and to freely worship, and also to extend, as their pastor had taught them, into the civil sphere, to create a civil body politic. And, of course, that happened a lot sooner than they thought, because when they were blown off course by several hundred miles, and here they are on the tip of Cape Cod, they're in a situation where there's mutiny talked about on board. They're going to have to bring some unity. They were trained in the principle of covenant. As true reformers, they recognized that they would start getting this agreement, start with the highest common denominator, what is the highest ideal everyone can agree to. And this was truly remarkable, because here are these Christians, and it's this church on board, the ship that's coming over here, they wouldn't have come. And you have a lot of non-Christians there, too. You have individuals that are hired among you, and you set up a civil body politic. And the pilgrims set it up in such a way that you didn't have to be a member of the church in order to vote in civil government. Everyone was going to have an equal vote in the civil body politic. That was remarkable, because they set up a church and a state, according to biblical principles, way ahead of their time.
Well, that's right. And one of the things that we like to do is to read the Mayflower Compact on Thanksgiving, because of that civil body compact that they agreed to, and forging this new gathering in this new land, in the frontier. And of course, they didn't know exactly what to expect when they got on shore, but God had really gone before them and provided for them where they actually end up landing. We're talking with Paul Jaley. He is the pastor in Plymouth, Massachusetts, and also part of the Plymouth Rock Foundation. And if you'd like to learn more of the work that they do at the Plymouth Rock Foundation, the website is plymrock.org. That's plymrock.org. Pastor, you know, as we talk about what the 104 pilgrims that came to on the Mayflower, when they landed, obviously it was late in the year. This was a very difficult time, because the voyage had been delayed, because the first ship that they were going to take, the Speedwell, obviously took on water and they had to head back to England. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, and you know, the Speedwell, that's the only ship they owned, and the one that they got on board from Leiden and went down to London to get the hired ship, the Mayflower, It was a tremendous loss because here they were having to sell the ship, and of course, because it had a reputation of leaking, later on, Bradford writes that they believe the captain of that ship overmasted the ship on purpose to provide a link because he didn't want to go to the New World. See, it was so unusual to go as families with women and children during that time period that it was a tremendous danger. But here they were, have to sell their ship. They're in Plymouth, England, and here they're going to leave from Plymouth, England in a crammed ship. 18 or so had to return. And so you have this parting of ways, so to speak. Not only did you lose many of your supplies because you've been so delayed, you had to eat out your store, but also you were in a situation where the very ship you owned that was going to help you fish and bring back supplies and pay off the investors, you're having to leave behind, and for a great loss. So in spite of losing everything, everything seeming to go wrong, they finally cram on board the Mayflower, 102, and of course, as you noted, there was one born on the voyage over the way, and actually two born before they actually landed. And they recognized that here they are, and just think of this, here the women are getting on board the Mayflower pregnant. So you're talking about a tremendous amount of sacrifice and commitment that these families had. And then they finally do land, but now by the time they've been delayed with all these problems, they're landing, they're sighting land November 9 outside the Cape. They write the compact on November the 11th on a Saturday. They worship God on a Sunday. They won't land on that day. And then they, on the 13th, which is a Monday, they go ashore on the tip of Cape Cod where Provincetown is today. There they knelt in the sand and they asked God's blessing. And Bradford would always give biblical allusions throughout all his writings on every advent of the pilgrims. He had said when they had those people leave because of the speedwell, and thus like Gideon's army, God separated or reduced their number. Because their numbers had been too much for the work that he had to do. And here they are on the sand and on this sandbar, and they're looking for several things in order to set up a colony. They're looking for fresh water. They're looking for a shallow harbor. They're looking for a high hill, and they're looking for cleared farmland, knowing they're coming in the winter, and how are they going to grow their corn in the spring? And will the supplies they've brought actually last? Or will the captain say he's going right back to England to avoid staying in the winter, and then they haven't hardly any supplies at all. And they'll come to find out they explore for 30 days, and then providentially they end up shipwrecked on a little island off of Plymouth, where they would eventually call it Plymouth, New England. And there they worship God on a Sunday, and then Monday, December the 11th, they land on the historic Plymouth Rock. And this is, what a story. Here's December the 11th. And they're landing, and they said at one time their clothes had frozen on them because of the salt spray in the boat, the exploration boat. But here they found in Plymouth all four of those things. Some abandoned farmland, they found the High Hill, which we call Coles Hill and Burial Hill today, and they also found a small harbor and, of course, fresh water. And because they saw this, they decided they would land there. And that's where their settlement began, but it took several weeks and months, and that first winter took its toll. Two or three died sometimes in a day, and they buried them on that small hill, and so they even were less. In fact, when it comes time to spring of 1621, they had only 51 of the original pilgrims that had come, and but more children survived in proportion than adults. They thought that was the providence of God. They had met the natives and had a peace treaty in March of 1621, and when April 5 came of 1621, that's when the Mayflower left to go back to England, and not one pilgrim returned. And the scene and the painting of that is pretty amazing, because you see there's a last link to civilization as they know it going over the horizon. And here they are in Plymouth, and that's when they began to recover and began to prepare. And because of that peace with the natives, that's why we have such a unique first Thanksgiving of 1621. Certainly, the pilgrims weren't the first people to give thanks to God for a harvest, nor were they the first people to simply thank God for what he had taken them through. But because of the friendship with the Wampanoags and the fact that they had a three-day feast together, and it's a good thing the Wampanoag brought much of the food, and Squanto and had helped them to plant corn because their own seed would not grow in the sandy soil. All of that friendship, friendly competition, a three-day feast is so unique in all of history. Here in just a few short months, their testimony, their character was such, in both sides, because we credit much the Massasoit and the Wampanoag for the same thing, for peaceful, a peaceful treaty. Here it is, when we sit down for dinner, for most people tomorrow, yes, there were wild turkeys, yes, there was all kinds of venison and fowl and whatnot for dinner. It is a thankfulness to God, and we can trace all the way back that harvest festival they had back in England, all the way back probably to the time of King Alfred, where it truly was a leftover from the Feast of Tabernacles, a time to thank God for bringing you and causing you to survive in a wilderness with very little, but you recognize you don't deserve anything. Therefore, whatever you get is the mercy of God. That is truly the heart of the real Thanksgiving.
Well, you know, Pastor, that is just really incredible when we think about it, that where God had led them to the shore, and of course, the Indian tribe that had previously inhabited that area had all but perished in a smallpox epidemic. It was Squanto, of course, that was his tribe. He was taken as a slave, quite honestly, over in Europe. He was returning. When he returned to where his old village was, everybody was gone. So he joined with the other tribe, of which, of course, was Chief Massasoit, and he joined with them. But it was Samoset, his friend as well, who learned English. So when he comes out of the woods and greets, it's the first time that they see an Indian, he's speaking English. He says, welcome.
Exactly.
English. And it's like, so God had really paved the way and made a way for this this faith journey of this new gathering of Christians coming to the new world.
And you know, you recognize that this seeing the silver lining in the midst of suffering is a key doctrine in the Bible, and the pilgrims attempted to practice that. Because even the cleared farmland, these were Wampanoags who had died because of a plague, most likely because of the trading and the mix that took place 6 years before. And Thomas Hunt, that trader, is the one who took these natives as slaves. So it's a terrible blight on Christianity and the Europeans that they have to overcome to have this peace, because certainly no Wampanoag is going to trust a white man coming after all that. And you recognize here they had to overcome this and to do it in such a way that they could see the silver lining, even though it was in the midst of suffering. And recognizing that we have so much to be grateful for here in America. We have so many blessings. When you think about so many people across the world who are living in such abject suffering, we ought to be so grateful and thankful to God for all that we have and relive that story. You know, as William Bradford said, it was our governor went on fowling and after several days brought forth this, and they recognized they were going to have a day of rejoicing. May that be the case again in America, and may we learn these lessons from our past.
Pastor, can you stay with us on the other side to continue our discussion?
Sure.
Okay, great. We're talking with Pastor Paul Jaley of the Plymouth Rock Foundation in Plymouth, Massachusetts. We're returning to Plymouth this year, and with the Ohio Christian Alliance, we're going to be taking a tour. We're going to talk about that on the next segment. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back after these messages. Don't go away.
Looking out for seniors today. It's not the AARP. AARP worked overtime to help pass Obamacare, the legislation that cut over $700 billion from Medicare. And AARP supports the death tax, which can rob families of over half their savings due to the death of a loved one. Seniors know that AARP would rather make millions peddling insurance products than support the policies that actually help America's elderly. That's why America's seniors count on the 60 Plus Association. For more than 20 years, 60 Plus has been fighting for the seniors that AARP has left behind. 60 Plus Plus fought against Obamacare and continues to fight every day for its repeal in Washington. And 60 Plus is the leading national organization working to repeal the death tax once and for all, so that families can pass down their businesses and farms to the next generation, not the IRS. Stand up for your values. Join 60 Plus today. Visit 60plus.org or call 703-807-2070. This message paid for and authorized by the 60 Plus Association.
I'm Johnette Cruz, and I'm a busy mom. Then a friend told me about TrustBlueReview.com, a new website powered by the Christian Blue Network. She uses it to find trusted Christian-owned businesses. I checked it out, read the helpful reviews, and found a great family dentist. Now I use TrustBlueReview for all my family's needs. For peace of mind, do what I did. Visit TrustBlueReview.com or download their free mobile app from your app store today.
The trusted source for all you do, TrustBlueReview.
Will my kids like this dentist? Can I trust this mechanic? Who's a good choice for my upcoming remodel? I found businesses I can trust from TrustBlueReview.com.
This company rebuilt our deck and renovated our bathroom. I'd highly recommend them to anyone looking to hire an honest contractor.
The best dentist experience I've ever had.
It's now easy to find trusted businesses in my community that have the same Christian values as my family. It all starts at TrustBlueReview.com or download their app in the App Store today.
The trusted source for all you do. Trust Blue Review.
Okay, we're back with Pastor Paul Jaylee, who is the Executive Director of the Plymouth Rock Foundation in Plymouth, Massachusetts. And we're talking about returning to Plymouth in the summer of 2018. We would like for you to join us. If you'd like more information about that, go to our website at the Ohio Christian Alliance, and you'll see right on the top of the page, the first article there is about return to Plymouth, and there's a form there to fill out. We're working on dates and times. We're going to be meeting there in Plymouth, and we're going to be taking the tours of the village or the plantation of Plymouth. And then we'll also be walking Freedom Trail as well. We'll be heading up to Boston and walking Freedom Trail. This is going to be a great heritage tour with the Ohio Christian Alliance. We hope that you can join us. Our good friend Bill Fetter will also be joining us and weighing in. And there'll be reenactments, and there's going to be a lot of fun. So we hope that you can join us. If you'd like more information also, you can phone us at 330-887-1922 or go to our website. Just Google Ohio Christian Alliance. Pastor, you've been doing these tours. Obviously, the good folks, Leo and Nancy Martin at the Jenny Museum, we really enjoyed spending some time with them. And in fact, Leo took us on the tour of the village of Plymouth, and we really enjoyed that. One of the things that really stood out to me was he took us to the site of the first grist mill in America, and of course the headwaters of this fresh water that comes off the out of the land and heads to the sea, and that's of course the fresh water that you're referring to that the pilgrims used 400 years ago, and it's the same stream that comes up that's spring fed is still fresh water today. In fact, is it herring that actually go from the ocean back up to, and that, and I think that the Natural Department of Resources of Massachusetts counting something like 385,000 that went up that little spring. So God's provided a lot of fish. It's still working 400 years later.
That's right. That's right. And yeah, it's really a blessing. And I think that more people that need to come back to Plymouth for various events that we put on each year. We put on a little conference where we concentrate tours of Boston and Plymouth. And then also, of course, in November, the weekend before Thanksgiving, we have a massive celebration here in Plymouth, Massachusetts, a chronologically historic parade, as well as honoring our veterans. And well over 100,000 people have come to that event the weekend before Thanksgiving. So there's a lot of things to do prior to 2020. And of course, in 2020, we will be having an entire festival for almost a week long with Plymouth Rock Foundation, honoring the faith of the pilgrims and their coming over to America. So there's a lot to look forward to. I'm glad you folks are coming.
Well, we look forward to it, and we're going to encourage others to join us throughout the summer. You know, one of the things that really impressed me was one of the great monuments. It's a state monument. I think it should actually be dedicated as a federal monument. It's called the Forefathers Monument, It's
right.
really grand in its scope, and it's rich in its architecture and its story. And the first time I heard about it was watching a little documentary that Kurt Cameron put on a couple of years ago about our American heritage, about our spiritual heritage as a country. And he went back to Plymouth, and he features the Forefathers Monument. That's the first I'd known about it. Tell us about that.
Yes, and I started doing research on that monument and giving tours in 1978, and wrote a book, Plymouth in the Words of Our Founders, which tells the story of the symbols on that monument. It's a grand monument that's filled with biblical and historic symbols designed by Hammett Billings, and it is a treasure. It really is a treasure in America. It uncovers the reasons why the pilgrims sailed. It's situated on a small knoll and hill in Plymouth that actually faces the nautical direction from which the pilgrims sailed. Its largest statue is Faith, her pointing up to heaven. There are four things that made a pilgrim on that monument. They believed in Jesus Christ as the only mediator between God and man. She's holding a Geneva Bible being blown open by the wind. She has a star on her forehead because they believed in reasoning from the scriptures to every area of life. And her foot is on Plymouth Rock because they providentially were brought to Plymouth. And, you know, when you think about those things, it truly reminds Americans that when they look back on our history, particularly, what makes America exceptional is not because it has people and not because Americans are any better than anyone else. What makes it exceptional is because God led these people here in such a powerful way to set up a community and government built on the Word of God and its truth. And this is what is so powerful when you sit and you look at this monument. 81 feet tall, it's massive. In fact, it always takes people's breath away when a bus comes up there or I meet them in costume and begin to make this tour. And, of course, we have some videos of that tour as well that are available on our website. So people can take that tour by video before they get here and take it in person.
And I would encourage them to do that because it helps you to understand what you're going to be seeing when you get to Plymouth. Well, you know, Pastor, one of the things that I always like to do when I visit a town is I'm one of those weird guys that likes to go to the cemetery. I like to go because if you go to a cemetery, you learn about the heritage of where you're visiting. And I've, you know, from Dayton, Ohio, back in the day where I was in a youth outreach at Dayton, Ohio, and I took a little prayer walk, and I ended up into the cemetery on the top of the hill. And next thing I know, as I'm having devotion, I look down and I'm looking at the Wright brothers' grave, and then I'm looking up and a large C-130 is passing overhead. And I said, "Well, gentlemen, we've come a long way since your first biplane." And so,
right.
You know, it's really a lot of fun. So the second oldest cemetery in the country is, of course, there in Plymouth. The oldest, of course, is in the Virginia Landings. But you can learn a lot by just visiting the cemetery there at Plymouth. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, and of course, you're referring to Burial Hill. The very first cemetery was right on the waterfront, Coles Hill, where they buried the people who died the first winter in unmarked graves. But then they soon began to bury up on the hill toward the top of where they put their fort. And that Burial Hill has graves of pilgrims and, of course, graves of succeeding generations. And that Burial Hill has become a place where people who really know the stories and the lives of these individuals will go up and remember. And it's up on a hill, so you can kind of overlook the whole town of Plymouth, look out into the harbor, especially this time of year when the leaves are gone, and you can begin to recognize that, gee, what price they paid for the liberties we so often take for granted. And we are so thankful, not only for the peace that they had with the natives here and the peace that they endeavored to continue, but we have something to look back to and help us in today's society. We're so fractured today. We have so many things that are causing discord. We need to begin to live out our Christianity in such a way that it brings peace. For the Bible clearly says, blessed are the peacemakers. They'll be called the children of God. And I think of that when I go on Burial Hill, whether it's William Bradford's grave, Robert Cushman, one of their agents who's buried there, or even later generations, what I call the new pilgrim of the early 1800s, Adoniram Judson, whose family plot is there because his boyhood home was right in Plymouth overlooking the harbor. So, you know, all these things are so powerful when you come to Plymouth. So, yeah, you can take a tour and see the origins of America right there in a snapshot in this small village.
Well, William Bradford, of course, is buried there on Cemetery Hill. And, of course, he was so instrumental, you know, as the governor of Plymouth and obviously a very skilled man, but one who also wrote the history. He archived everything. And the book that he wrote was basically a history of the Pilgrims. Tell us about that.
Yes. You know, he wrote, began writing in 1630, about 10 years after they came. He compiled a diary that at one time was known as the Log of the Mayflower, but became known as Of Plymouth Plantation by Bradford. And he wrote until all the way up until about the time he died. And, you know, in 1657, even though his history goes to about 1647, you recognize that here is it's a literary classic. It really is. It's not merely a factual book. It's written with great prose. Here is a man who lost his mother and father by the time he was six. He was an individual that became a converted individual by the time he was 12. He joined the Separatist Church at 14. He was almost disowned by his uncle and aunt and almost lost his inheritance in order to do so. He wrote at 14 years of age that I will be glad to suffer anything for the cause of Christ. A committed teenager who joins the Pilgrim Church, who becomes a governor by the time he turns 30. And here he's an historian. And a person who managed people very well, was elected unanimously every time he ran for governor. And at his funeral, not only the Wampanoags, but almost every other community around Massachusetts was represented at his funeral because he had such a powerful testimony. And here is the one that wrote the history. And the history itself went through an amazing, it was borrowed by historians in Boston, nearly destroyed in a flood and a fire. And even the American Revolution, it was taken as booty back over to England and then providentially found and returned by the end of the 19th century. And so here, that book, Bradford's original journal, now is in the archives right here in Massachusetts in Boston and will be on display most likely at Pilgrim Hall Museum, the first public museum in America still continuing. It'll be there in 2020. So here is something but you can buy a copy today. You can buy a Plymouth Plantation and begin reading it to your children.
And what was so interesting, like you said, it was lost in time because during the American Revolution, the British raided and took the archives and took them back to England. So everybody thought it was lost or destroyed. Here they kept it in England in archives, and then it was discovered. And then, of course, the British government gave it back to the people of America. So when did that happen, that it was transferred back?
It was transferred back in the 1890s, 1897, and it was an amazing thing because Senator Hoar was on vacation over in England, wanted to get his hands on it, and he was about to leave, and he just kind of remarked to his host, I just wish someone knew the Bishop of London where that must be, and he said, oh, I just happen to know someone who's married to his niece, and the way it happened is, providentially, within 24 hours, he's holding the book, and he says to the Bishop of London, this book, by God's grace, has got to come back to America. And he said, well, we didn't know anybody cared about it at all. And it was kind of an interesting story. And that became known as a real legacy of how the actual book by William Bradford got returned by the turn of the century, by 1900, where the first facsimile copies were finally published. And the common person, and not just historians who are in archives with white gloves, but people can get an understanding of what it is. It's an American classic. Should be read by every high school student. Prior to their graduating, because it shows the actual legacy of the Pilgrims and, of course, the legacy of our history.
Well, that's right. We're talking to Paul Jaley. He is the executive director of the Plymouth Rock Foundation, and we're talking about returning to Plymouth. And as this is Thanksgiving weekend, and we're hoping that you're enjoying it with your family as we give thanks to God. And our focus should really be upon Him and our devotion to Him. You know, a lot of people go to Plymouth Rock, and of course, they want to look at the rock itself. And of course, now there's a very grand housing for the rock, as it were, that was constructed some years back. And of course, the rock itself, the question is, I think for the Park Service there, was this the actual rock? I thought what Leo said in his little tour, in fact, it was funny when he came up to the rock itself, and there was a group of people from the Park Service was doing a tour, and he carries that little audio set with him, so he broadcasts as he's doing his tour, which is great because he talks about was this the actual rock that they stepped off onto when they came on the shore, and the fact is that there was an old one of the original Puritans when he was in his 90s or something like that came back and wanted to see it one last time before he died. What's really the story behind the rock itself?
Well, the year was 1741, and Plymouth was a fishing town, and the wharves went out into the ocean, and there was they were about to tear down the wharf and not thinking about the actual rock underneath it. And when they did, they actually, this guy Thomas Fonsi, he's 95 years of age. He comes down and he says, "Hey, listen, this is a significant rock." He starts telling them the story that Bradford evidently went down to the waterfront, and his father heard this firsthand, this Thomas Fonsi's father, that this was the rock the Pilgrims first stepped on. And Bradford had taught them the history and gone down to there. And they found out he was 8 years old when Bradford was alive. And so they took it as an eyewitness testimony. Here he was an elder of the first church in town. He was very well known and had a great reputation. So here's an eyewitness account, providentially, 4 years later at 99, the man passes away. We would never have known about it otherwise. And that's how the rock became identified. Otherwise, the Pilgrims would never have written what rock they actually stepped on, and most people wouldn't do that. So here we have that stepping stone, so to speak, of freedom. And when Calvin Coolidge came back to Plymouth in 1920, he said it symbolizes the eternity of God, eternity past and present, because it's not just a boulder, even though it is uniquely, even physically unique on the East Coast. It represents a stepping stone, and it's not a bad thing, as one historian said, that a nation be founded on a rock, especially when the rock symbolizes their beliefs that they're unwilling to compromise. And that's what we look back today and recognize, gee, this is a phenomenal piece of history, and therefore there's more to it than meets the eye, because it is quite small, and most tourists say, oh, I came all the way to see this. And, of course, it's only a third of its original size because so many people have chipped off pieces. But the story of the rock is also a remarkable story.
It really is. And, of course, during the Revolutionary War, of course, the story goes that there were those who were trying to recruit troops there in Plymouth. And, of course, some of these folks were pacifists, not all, but they carted the rock up to the town square, and in doing so, it split. And that some of them thought, well, maybe this is a sign from God that we're to split with Great Britain. So they actually recruited troops that day. So there was a point in which the rock was split. Tell us about that.
That's true. In fact, you know, we had a situation where they would, everyone was gathered around. They started to lift the rock up. The top half broke off the bottom half, and that's how they knew that somebody just yelled out and said, hey, this is a prophetic omen that we're going to split from Great Britain. And that was in 1774, and then they did move the top half of the rock to Town Green, where people did sign up to join the Sons of Liberty for the American Revolution. So, yes, quite a story. There are so many stories when you begin studying them and looking at them that point to the providential hand of God, because that's what God does. He times events to forward his story. He's really the originator and overseer of all of history. And when we see it that way, history comes alive, and we can't wait to learn more.
Well, and the town square itself, of course, has the courthouse, of which John Adams himself had argued cases at. That was very interesting to me, and that his good friend Paul Revere waited outside at times and the square waiting for John Adams to finish his work. So, Leo does really a thorough job of taking you through the town. Of course, seeing the site of where the first church was erected was so important. And, of course, now there was a split from the original church with a more conservative sect that split off from them. Tell us a little bit about that, which is called the Church of the Pilgrimage.
Yes, the Church of the Pilgrimage was, well, what happened is there was a Unitarian controversy in the early 1800s, and the church that split off from it remained as a Trinitarian church. And so they built a church right on the town square there just a few years later. And of course, when that church seemed to not hold to the original Trinitarian beliefs and the beliefs of the Pilgrims, another church split off, which is called the Chiltonville Congregational Church in 1814. So like it has happened in many other places, individuals, there's always a remnant that wants to keep up the original beliefs and the original ideas, and that's the critical thing.
We're talking with Pastor Paul Jaley, who pastors in Plymouth, Massachusetts. He is also the executive director of the Plymouth Rock Foundation. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back on the other side with a reading of the Mayflower Compact. Don't go away.
Who's looking out for seniors today? It's not the AARP. AARP worked overtime to help pass Obamacare, the legislation that cut over $700 billion from Medicare. And AARP supports the death tax, which can rob families of over half their savings due to the death of a loved one. Seniors know that AARP would rather make millions peddling insurance products than support the policies that actually help America's elderly. That's why America's seniors count on the 60 Plus Association. For more than 20 years, 60 Plus has been fighting for the seniors that AARP has left behind. 60 Plus fought against Obamacare and continues to fight every day for its repeal in Washington. And 60 Plus is the leading national organization working to repeal the death tax once and for all, so that families can pass down their businesses and farms to the next generation, not the IRS. Stand up for your values. Join 60 Plus today. Visit 60plus.org or call 703-807-2070. This message paid for and authorized by the 60 Plus Association.
And we're back, and we're with Pastor Paul Jaley, who is the pastor in Plymouth, Massachusetts, also the executive director of the Plymouth Rock Foundation. We're so glad, Pastor, that God called you back to this historic place in America to do what you're doing with the reenactments. And I understand that your church actually reenacts church service of the pilgrims and for the different visitors who come to visit Plymouth every year. Tell us a little bit about that, the reenactments.
Well, the reenactment started in 1921 in the town of Plymouth to reenact the pilgrims going to church. And that's because there was an eyewitness account in 1627, a Dutch trader who came to Plymouth. And when he was trading in different goods, he began to chronicle how they went to church with their arms, their guns, ready for in case they had to defend themselves, although they never did. They lived in peace with those around them. And they went with a drummer leading the way up to their meeting house, and then they would have their church service. And so they'd stop house by house and kind of go in procession. Well, that became pretty famous once that was published. And the town of Plymouth began to, in the tercentenary celebration at the 300th anniversary, they began to reenact that. And the town of Plymouth did that for many years. And then in the 1990s or so, we began to get involved. Individuals in our own church began to serve in the town of Plymouth, began to direct that. So it's not something run by our church, although there are members of our church that help organize it. And so now the Plymouth Rock Foundation is one of the key sponsors of keeping that alive, so that on through 2020, every Friday in August, as well as Thanksgiving Day, we'll be doing it again tomorrow. We will reenact those 51 surviving pilgrims walking through town with a drummer, going right up the very street where they lived, and then going up to Burial Hill and reenacting a mini church service where we sing the actual psalms of the pilgrims, and then we have a mini sermon. I'll be Elder Brewster tomorrow on Thanksgiving Day, and I'll be giving a short ideas of a sermon that they would have been preached back then. And of course, we'll be talking a bit about Thanksgiving. So there's a lot of visitors who like to see these reenactments take place. In addition, we do reenactments of an hour-long mini church Sabbath meeting like the pilgrims. We'll sing the actual psalms, we'll say exactly how their service was conducted, and then I'll preach a sermon, often 15, 20 minutes of exactly right from the diaries of the pilgrims themselves. That way, tourists can kind of go back in time and realize that it's really the church of the pilgrims that founded America. It's not some explorers that simply wanted freedom.
Those who would like to visit you throughout the year, of course, you're there, the Jenny Museum with Leo and Nancy Martin to conduct tours. How can folks, what website should they go to get linked up for a tour if they're not, you know, they're going to be coming sometime this year?
Well, they can come right to the Plymouth Rock Foundation, 1PLYMROCK.org. They can get information there. And we are also linked, of course, up with Jenny Museum. They can go on and get JennyMuseum.org as well and get some information on tours. Leo does tours almost every day, so they don't have to wait for my tour, the special tours and whatnot. But there are several times a year, and one, I think, coming up this next year in 2018 in early August, where we'll do about 4 days of intensive tours, and I do tours of Boston and the State House in Boston, and those are the kinds of things, if people want to come and get several tours all at once, they can also do so, and all those things will be advertised on those two websites. And of course, the weekend before Thanksgiving, at usathanksgiving.com will show the huge event that we help serve in that reminds everyone about the origin of Thanksgiving.
Well, Pastor, thank you so much for what you're doing there in one of the heritage places of our country, Plymouth Rock. And we just want to thank you, brother, for all that you're doing. We look forward to coming up and visiting you this summer. We'll get back to you on details on that. So thanks so much for being my guest today, Pastor. God bless you.
Well, God bless you, and have a happy Thanksgiving.
Very good. That was Pastor Paul Jaley, again, the Executive Director of the Plymouth Rock Foundation. I'd like to close with the reading of the Mayflower Compact. In the name of God, amen. We whose names are underwritten, the loyal subjects of our dread sovereign Lord King James, by the grace of God of Great Britain, France, and Ireland, King Defender of the Faith, having undertaken for the glory of God and advancement of the Christian faith in honor of our King and country, a voyage to plant the first colony in the northern parts of Virginia, do by these present solemnly and mutually in the presence of God and one another, covenant and combine ourselves together in a civil body politic for our better ordering and preservation of furtherance of the ends aforesaid, and by virtue hereof to enact, constitute, and frame such justice and equal laws, ordinances, acts, constitutes, and offices from time to time, as shall be thought most meet and convenient for the general good of the colony. Well, this is the Mayflower Compact, and I hope that you will enjoy Thanksgiving with your family. Remember, rejoice evermore, pray without ceasing, in everything give thanks, for this is the will of God in Christ Jesus concerning you. If you missed any of today's program, you can log on to our website at ohioca.org and hear the rest. God bless. We'll see you next time. Happy Thanksgiving.
You have been listening to News in Focus with your host, Chris Long, president of the Ohio Christian Alliance. To learn more about the issues that matter most to you and your family, visit online at ohioca.org. That's ohioca.org. Thank you for listening. This program is sponsored by the Ohio Christian Alliance of Akron, Ohio.